for Geek Gamer Weekly.
Center of the most calculating intelligence on Earth.
The Uber Podcast, just for geeks and gamers.
We have news for the beautiful people. There's a lot more of us in our view.
With your hosts, Joseph Falby.
Men wanted to be like him. Women wanted to be with him.
John Kessler.
He will be talked about in the same way that Rockefeller and Carnegie and Ford are talked about.
And Chase Nunes.
For your information, butthead, he's headed for the video championships in Los Angeles.
Now, live from Earth.
Everything that happens now is happening now.
What happened then?
When?
Just now.
It's Geek Gamer Weekly.
This is Geek Gamer Weekly, episode 225, recorded on Sunday, January 6, 2013. The CES 2013 preview and more. Geek Gamer Weekly is brought to you by Personas and the Personas Studio Live 1602 digital mixer that provides a complete solution for live and studio applications. For more information, visit Personas.com. Hey everybody, welcome again to another edition of Geek Gamer Weekly. This is the Uber Podcast for geeks and gamers. Happy New Year. I know this is our very first show of 2013, or 2013 as I like to argue it with some of my friends. We got a great panel. We got a great show. We're having a lot of fun. If you miss out on the pre-show, you might want to follow us when we do these things, because sometimes we don't get started for like 30 or 45 minutes because we have nothing else better to do than just BS. My name is Chase Nunes, and we got, like I said, a great show lined up for you, a huge show, a big show. Starting off first here in the studio, John Kessler. By the way, give your prayers to John Kessler. He's not feeling well. He's actually got flu-like symptoms, as they say, so he can't make it. His first week he's missed in a long time, but stepping up to the plate, filling in the big seat over there, Jupiter Broadcasting's own Chris Fisher. Hey, Chris, how are you?
Chase, I'm just ducky.
Sweet, man. Very nice. Very nice. You're looking good in your sport coat.
Thank you. Thank you. I thought I would represent. Try to respect.
You should. Respect. Yeah. Is that corduroy? Yeah.
It is. Because I figured I wouldn't dress too much. I have a suit jacket, but I figured that'd be too much. But corduroy's still like, I'm showing up. I'm wearing a jacket. I'm respecting you.
You're respecting the respect.
And I'm respecting the new studio.
You like it?
I do. It's my first time here. That's my favorite part.
It is.
It is my favorite part.
It feels so nice.
It is good. I really like it.
Thank you.
It's exactly what I would do.
Really?
It is, yeah.
That took a while to wire, but I mean, once I figured it out.
Can you do one in my place?
I could.
All right.
I did one in my wife's
office. I actually want to put one in the studio.
It's a great idea. And by the way, if you look inside, those are energy efficient bulbs.
I need to consult with you.
We can consult after the show. I am small nominal fee. Also, joining us this week, as always, from the Oregon Bureau of Technology, Gaming Research, and Development, the CEO of said place, Joe Falby. Hey, Joe.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, buddy. Good. Wearing a different hat every show, and this week it's the San Diego Zoo.
Yep. On Minecraft, I wore my Disney hat.
Yep.
Which I got in Disney World last week.
Oh, surprise.
And so this time I figured I'd wear my San Diego Zoo hat, which
you mean
I got
Disneyland,
at the San Diego Zoo. Imagine that.
You mean Disneyland, not Disney World.
Yep, sorry. Disney, whatever it is. California
Adventure.
You two
are so adorable. You are so adorable. Look at you correcting them on his story.
Just like a married couple. I actually should have gotten a California Science Center hat. I didn't.
Oh,
but I really should have, with the Endeavor shuttle on it and everything. Mm-hmm.
Would it have a Toyota logo on that as well?
I don't think Toyota paid enough money for that.
Oh, okay.
They only paid enough money to tow the shuttle for like 500 feet.
That's called hat money. Yeah, we call that hat money.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They needed that's the extra $1 million that they didn't bother spending.
Yeah.
By the way, our chat room is wondering the CEO of where. It's the Oregon Bureau of Technology, Gaming Research, and Development.
Ah.
It changes every other episode.
Well, there's mergers and acquisitions.
No, it's because Chase forgets exactly what he put in last time, so he puts in something a little different the next time.
Well, it's actually not on your lower third anymore. I just put payback in Minecraft.
Don't we have somebody else on the show?
Yeah, we do, but he's not important. Here he is, folks.
in
glorious 1080p.
In Technicolor, too.
In Technicolor. And that is not a green screen. He's actually in front of a real shower curtain.
Fresh from the shower.
Here he is, John Bubb, Suncast, What's up, buddy? How are you, John?
Yo, what up?
We had to have a John on the show this week. It would feel very weird if we didn't have a John somehow, some way on the show.
I think this is my second time on a show with John, too. With John from...
Really? You guys were on the show together?
Yeah, yeah.
That is not
once
coincidence.
Once before, I think.
Dude, you and I should start a show together and just screw these guys.
Yeah.
Well, would it be called like Linux Action Show or something?
Start that Kickstarter show on GFQ Network.
You got it, buddy. You got it.
Kick the Q out.
Animosity.
Yeah, I know. Whatever. Hey, guys. Let's talk about some geek topics. Now, there's some little show happening this week, which is called the Consumer Electronics Show. That's happening in Las Vegas. But that's not going to be our top story this week.
Ooh.
That is not what we're going to
start. I would
have
thought that would be the top story.
I know. Yeah. But since we have so many stories about CES this week, I wanted to lead off with this story.
Okay.
And the department of, I wonder what they're thinking.
Oh.
So put your head in their department for a minute. For those users who are using Windows Phone, if you tried to go to maps.google.com,
I heard about this.
You were being redirected to google.com. Now, Google is saying that they're not going to redirect anymore, but the reason why that they were redirecting in the first place is because...
Wait, can I guess?
Do you not know about this?
No, I have not read the rationale, but is it to preserve user experience because the user experience has not yet been redefined for the Windows Phone?
That's a very close answer.
Okay, what is it?
But that's not actually the answer.
No, I know.
What is it?
I was trying to make them feel good,
Joe.
No,
I mean, if that's not what it is, maybe it's better, because if that's what it is, I was going to give them such a hard time.
Now, do you want me to read the quote normally, or do you want me to read it in a style that a marketing person would
say? Yeah, no, like the person that wrote it, how they would say it. Yeah.
Okay.
Like,
just to let you know, we periodically test Google Maps compatibility with mobile browsers to make sure we deliver the best experience for those users. In our last test, IE Mobile still did not offer a good experience.
Oh, ouch.
With no ability to pan or zoom and perform basic map functionality.
Oh, shit!
Now, as a result, we had to continue to redirect IE users to Google.com where they can at least make local searches.
No.
Yeah. Yeah.
They said at least?
At least. At least they can make local.
That's a quote?
That's a quote.
That is such a slam. So they're slamming Internet Explorer Mobile. They're slamming the pan and zoom. They're slamming what was the last? Oh my gosh, this is a slam.
Yeah, so here is the last part of the quote, and then I will get your guys' opinions.
Okay.
Recent improvements to IE Mobile and Google Maps now deliver a better experience, and we are working to remove the redirect. We will continue to test Google Maps compatibility with other mobile browsers to ensure the best possible experience for users.
Can I just chime in?
Yeah, of course.
I don't mean to...
No,
but
of course. This is what the show is all about.
So let's talk about how technology works, okay? So, by the way, to remove a redirect...
Wait, was that a facepalm, Joe?
No. I'm fine.
Okay. So, I like the concept that Google has to spend a lot of time working to remove the redirect. Like, that takes a lot of time to... You know, we got to talk to the committee.
Well, no. It's not that it takes a long time to remove the redirect. It's that they fixed the problems in IE really quickly.
No. See,
and it
what
takes
you
them
do
longer to remove the redirect.
Is you make the web app available, right? So you make the web app available to whoever wants it. Anybody can go to the web app because it's on the internet and it's a website. So you load a website in a browser,
and then
it's up to the browser manufacturer to make sure that website works. Or maybe if you're not following the standards, you adjust your website to follow the standards. This concept that you hide websites because they're not working properly, this is brand new. This is, I mean, you guys remember, there's
no,
a time.
No.
Oh, it's
no,
talking.
No, it's not
oh, oh, are you
no
kidding me?
No.
Hello, Firefox. Hello. You remember when Firefox and everybody said we have to run Internet Explorer because Firefox, it doesn't work right? Everybody, you just put your website up and it's up to the browser manufacturers to make your website work with that website. And if Google hides that.
This is Google coming at Microsoft.
Google is coming at Microsoft.
Time out. And it would say, this page is not designed for IE. Please download the real web browser.
No, right, hold on.
This is Google taking a slug at Microsoft. Fair and square. Google is taking a swipe at Microsoft here. The language they are using is a clear attack. Secondarily, because they're not making the website available, they don't let Microsoft make the fixes because you can't go to the website in order to do developer troubleshooting.
Okay, hold on. John, go.
Are you anti-Google?
I'm anti.
Yes, that's a yes.
I'm anti user experience. How this isn't a Google Microsoft thing.
But now, see,
this is
the
a
thing,
basic fundamental anti competitive maneuver.
You're not looking at this from the other side. Please. Google is thinking, well, in,
no,
in the
Google's
past,
thinking we don't
Google
want Microsoft.
Hold on, Chris.
Internet Explorer has been a horrible experience, and rather than having to put up with users that are pissed off at Google for having a poor experience because Microsoft can't design a damn good browser,
John,
they're
you're
just
right.
Not offered
John,
at all.
John, no, I totally understand where you're coming from, and I get what you're saying, but all you have to do to demonstrate that point is you put down a little pop-up that says, "We're sorry, but this is not yet fully compliant on your browser. Please contact your handset manufacturer to make this more compatible. But we'll try to make this work as best as possible in the meantime." And then what you do is you get users that are contacting Microsoft saying, "Hey,
so
we want this to work."
That's so 1999, like saying, "Oh, our site is not compatible with Netscape Navigator. Please
so
try
instead
IP.
You block access altogether?
Why not? It's a seamless experience moving over to
it's
some other Google
It's anti-competitive, that's why.
No way.
Maybe they should have, instead of redirecting to Google, redirected to Bing Maps, which I assume does work.
Microsoft built a good browser to begin with.
Well, I hate to be in the position to defend Microsoft.
A good
here.
Browser that goes on web standards.
No, you're absolutely right.
You know how many web designers out
there?
Oh
no, you don't
do
understand. From Microsoft's point of view, they define the web standard.
No, their website works with Internet Explorer.
I completely agree with John. John, you're right. Microsoft should have gone with a WebKit-based browser, right? They should have gone with something that runs on what every other
that's
mobile
ridiculous.
Device uses. And
no, that's absurd.
Why is that, Joe?
To Microsoft to run a WebKit-based browser, they're just going to throw away 20 years or however long it's been of IE development.
But
say, "Oh, we were wrong. Let's pick up this open source project and admit that it's better."
But Joe, see, here's the problem. They were beat to market by WebKit in mobile.
No, they weren't.
Joe.
No. Internet Explorer has been on Windows, on Windows
sure.
based, Windows 6.5
yeah.
and 6
no,
based
you're right.
smartphones
yeah. well,
for how many years?
Isn't that the irony of it all? Microsoft beat everybody to the punch 5 years ago before iPhone was ever announced, but Apple came along, announced the iPhone. They use WebKit, and then Google comes along, announces Chrome. It uses WebKit, and WebKit now dominates the mobile space as far as mobile browsers go. I mean, it's like 95%.
You're forgetting there's also Mozilla Mobile. The Firefox Mobile from Mozilla, I mean, that's a non-WebKit-based browser.
You're right.
I mean, there's a lot of... And Opera has their own mobile browser, but also not WebKit-based.
So here,
Joe, do you use any of those?
Let me ask this question.
I actually prefer, on my Nexus 7, I actually prefer the Mozilla browser over the Chrome browser.
I prefer the Chrome browser.
Now, I don't know how many of you guys have Windows Phone platform. I know, Joe, you messed around with it for a while.
Yep.
Were you able to download other browsers on the Windows Phone platform?
At when I was using it, the store had... almost no programs available in it.
See, what?
I mean, it had a few things, but it didn't have any alternative browsers, and I don't know if that's something Microsoft is keeping a clamp on or not.
And just like I'm wondering on iOS, where if you download a different browser, it still uses the underlying same kit. If you
probably
will.
Microsoft yeah. seemed to have modeled most of their foray into phones with Windows 7 and 8 or Windows Phone 7 and 8, very much after what Apple did with the iPhone. So they probably have the same restriction in place.
So. Do you guys believe with Google saying, "Okay, well, we want to make sure that we have a good experience for our users," or is this honestly Google just taking a shot at Microsoft here?
100%.
So you
it's
think
a little bit of both?
No, I think it's 100% Google taking a shot at Microsoft, because think about this. Let's just change the framing of this.
All right.
Let's say ridiculously, it's Bing Maps that are really popular.
Right.
And when you go to Bing Maps in Chrome or Safari, it says sorry. Doesn't work.
Right.
And you just can't do anything.
Yep.
Or if it did that in Firefox. That's not how developers fix it. Developers need to be able to bring up the Firebug debugging tool.
Yep.
I'm talking literally how you fix these things. You literally bring up the debugging tools.
Literally.
You figure out what's not working. You look at the code and you change your browser rendering engine so it renders that correctly. That's how you fix these things. And without being able to load
the
web page.
You're saying that mistakes on a website should be handled by the company that develops the web browser,
well,
not...
In this
not
case,
by who's writing the code for the website. Google's, even if it works with 99% of all the other sites out there, it's the developer of the web browser's fault
exactly.
that it doesn't work on
but
that
then,
one
but
site.
But then, okay, but Google's saying, oh, it's pan and zoom, it's this and that. Why not expose those flaws so that Microsoft is pressured by its users to fix them?
Because
they've been pressured all along, and Microsoft is too stubborn to do anything about it.
No, this... I'm leaning more towards Chris's response than I am towards your response, John, and here's why. See, what Microsoft has been doing with their mobile platform is trying to do something different. I mean, you got to give them that. They're trying to do something with Tiles. They're trying to change the user experience on the phone. They've partnered up with Nokia, the creators of great hardware. They actually have something really decent and really nice and beautiful. If you ask me, I think it's great. Now, you have users out there that are still tied into other ecosystems, a la Google, like, you know, Gmail, and they like and they're familiar with Maps.
Yeah.
So they go to that website. And Google knows this. Google knows that potentially Microsoft could be a threat to them somewhere down the road. As maybe
somewhere down the road? How about today?
Well, they're a threat. I'll just put it, you know, timelines aside, they're a threat right now.
Yeah.
And so what Google's doing is bringing up this BS. I don't think Microsoft changed a thing. I don't think Microsoft pushed an update to their IE mobile platform.
Right. Oh, that's a whole other angle to this story, is that it had worked previously.
Right. It just didn't work as well. And that's where, see, the thing is, Google didn't want to hear from users going, hey, why don't you make your site work better with this web browser, what Google wanted to do.
But then they would have to explain to every user that it's not their fault that it doesn't
then
work
let
good.
Them
it's
explain
Microsoft.
It. Then let them explain it.
Isn't that a marketing
do you know
opportunity?
How many people that's going to be? Look at the outrage.
A link. All they have to do is put a link.
iOS. When Apple switched to their own map system and Google Maps no longer worked with it.
Well, Google Maps always still worked. Yeah. You could go into the browser and go to maps.google.com and it would work
they
just
made
fine.
Sure that worked right away with Safari. And let's not pretend like Safari doesn't have a few quirks of its own that you have to customize for. And secondarily, this is a marketing opportunity for Google they're not taking advantage of. Again, I say they could put a little pop-up that says, by the way, this isn't working so well on your browser because your manufacturer isn't doing that good of a job. I mean, why not use that as an opportunity? Instead, what they're doing is they're taking sort of an anti-competitive stance to try to stunt the growth of Windows Mobile. That's what I think.
It's a backhanded way of doing it. I think they were trying to do it under the disguise of
user experience.
When in fact they felt threatened and they were like, how can we do this in such a way? But it really pissed off a lot of people. Now, the question is, will normal users, you and I and a lot of people who listen and watch this show, they're smart enough, they're geeks, they're gamers, they know what's going on here. But do you think grandma and grandpa and new users to Windows Phone see this?
They don't even know to go to maps.google.com.
You don't think so?
It's only us that
they're
going to
use whatever the built-in Maps app is.
Yeah.
Totally.
Nokia Maps is
whatever.
On a lot of these phones. Yeah,
whatever.
Yeah,
whatever
yeah.
it is.
They don't
yeah.
know.
Yeah.
Well, as said by the marketing genius over there at Google, they're working to remove the redirect, whatever that means.
it's real hard, you guys.
It's really hard.
It's real hard. We got to meet with the redirect committee. Please.
Yes.
Please.
Yes, we'll
skeptical
see.
Chris is skeptical.
Skeptical Chris is skeptical. Well, let's switch gears here and let's talk about the Super Bowl of electronic shows. That's the Consumer Electronics Show. That is in Las Vegas. It kicks off this week, and we have a little bit of a preview talking about different things that are going to be at the show.
Yeah, when you think of CES 2013, what's the first thing that pops into your head?
You know, Chris, I used to think about Microsoft.
I used to
think about them, or what is Bill going to say, or what's Ballmer going to be sweating about this year. But notably, they're absent this year. They're not going to be there. This is the first time since 1995 that Microsoft doesn't even have an exhibit at the show. They're non-existent. Now, another major company is non-existent at the show, Apple.
As always,
they're not there.
Now, what's different about this year is this will be the first year they're not, I believe, I could have the dating wrong, but I think this is the first year they're not doing a Macworld preemptively before
CES.
That's
true, or the same week.
Right. Right. So it's sort of that would be interesting. This would be
but
I think the
Macworld was never organized by Apple.
That's
Macworld
true.
Was organized by the magazine.
I just mean like a big product announcement at early January. Like that used to be Apple's like cycle, you know, kind of like a monthly cycle.
They only really did that because of Macworld and how it was scheduled twice a year, once in California and once in Boston. But a while ago, I mean years ago, and Microsoft said the same thing shortly afterwards. Basically said we're not going to conform to other people's schedules for events. We're going to do our own thing and announce our own products on our own time. Which, I mean, makes sense. It makes it a lot more flexible if you're a big company like that.
Will they be missed? I mean, I honestly will miss having Microsoft there at the show.
Mm-hmm. Why?
Why?
Xbox stuff? Microsoft?
That's E3.
Well, yeah. But the thing is, wasn't Microsoft the first, honestly, the first to come to the floor with tablets? Granted, the OS was terrible, but the Windows tablet OS, and Bill Gates was out there and saying this is going to revolutionize how things are. And this was like, what, 5 years too early or maybe even 7 years too early.
It is interesting to watch.
Microsoft has always come out with interesting hardware and interesting previews. And now they're not there. It's just weird because they are very much a consumer electronics company.
I kind of wonder if what you're getting at is it an indictment of this type of marketing? Because what this was about was getting access to press, getting access to buzz. And now companies have discovered,
well, that if they do their own thing, that they can get just as much buzz, and now they can control the buzz.
Right. And they don't need CES.
That's true.
Don't need CES to do that.
John,
the big companies are figuring that out.
Yeah. John, I mean, you've been quiet here. Do you think Microsoft, I mean, them not being at the show is a big deal?
Do I care? No.
Why not?
No. It's CES. I mean, this is...
It's gadget show, CES, right? It's a gadget show.
CES has been mostly TVs and ovens you can hook onto your wireless network.
So
and
much of
refrigerators with monitors in the cover and you know, like miscellaneous stuff that the average consumer doesn't really care about.
Well, remember, the CES show is meant for exhibitors to chat with other exhibitors and distributors. It's not meant for us. Really.
Well, then why do they call it the Consumer Electronics Show?
That's exactly my question, is that they come out with all these different things, and then, quite frankly, there's so much hype and buzz around this. There's so much press coverage. Every single tech blog out there covers this like it's the greatest thing ever. But then, realistically, we never see anything that ever comes out of CES.
Yeah, where's OLED TVs? That was a
big
thing.
Or if it does come out, it's either ridiculously expensive or ridiculously expensive and doesn't even work very well, such as Google TV.
Oh, ouch. Indictment.
Hey, Google TV works great as a front end for my Plex system. That's all I can figure out what to do with it, though. I mean, I haven't figured out anything
else. Well, one of the things that was teased a little bit earlier this week is Samsung. They released a teaser video, and I'll try to pull this up for you guys, about the world awaits something new. Mm-hmm. Get ready. And this was a transparent television.
Mm-hmm.
Did you guys see this?
No.
I heard about it.
I'll try to bring this up.
I don't know if I believe it. So if you got a little teaser, then maybe this is, I haven't seen this yet, Chase.
All right, so this is a 18-second teaser, so it should be long enough before I get taken down or whatever.
All right, yeah, I got to walk the line, Chase.
So here we go. Here's the teaser.
You turn off the audio.
Yeah. The world awaits.
The world
innovation,
awaits.
Innovation, ideas, design, marketing, technology. Get ready. And here it goes. It's going to show it.
Wow.
8th through 11th. And... where is it?
Something new. Get ready.
That was it. Yeah. See, they didn't show anything. See?
Wait, what?
That's a teaser.
What is that a teaser for?
Exactly.
It's a teaser for, like, what, 4 days? 3 days?
Exactly. Yep.
We're going to tease you that there are 3 days
doing
that will exist.
10 for the last 3 years.
Who cares?
Yeah. Does anybody want a transparent TV? Anybody?
No.
I don't understand what the point would be.
So that way you can see how messy your wires are behind your TV.
Well, the other
what if you, instead of using a transparent TV, you just got a projector and like a slightly frosty piece of glass? Wouldn't that be the same thing?
Totally.
This is why 4K. So 4K is ultra high definition, right? And the big
you think
thing,
it's a 4K TV, Chase?
I think it's going to be a 4K
TV. How could
TV.
It not be? At this point, if you're going to announce a new TV that's going to be revolutionary, it better be 4K or better.
I think
they tried 3D and they failed.
I think it's
And now they're going with this.
So you know how pissed off you get when you have a Blu-ray hooked up and you watch it on your nice HD TV and you still have bars on the top and bottom?
Wait, no. Vizio came out with an ultra wide screen TV. Did you not see that?
I think this is going to be a Samsung ultra wide. I think that's all it is.
I mean, Vizio has already got a 21:9, but no one's buying them.
Because they haven't hyped it.
No, because
okay, great. I can watch the movies in that screen, you know, perfectly.
Right.
But now every single TV show I watch is going to have balls on the side.
It's going to be balls. I'm not saying it's going to be good.
Well, they're going to come out with balls at CES?
No, I'm saying it's a horrible product and it's not going to sell.
Okay.
Yeah. I bet
pretty much everything at CES.
I bet if we were sitting in the same position, whatever they're hyping right now doesn't even ship.
Another thing that Forbes is saying.
This is my whole point, though. This is my whole point where there's so many products at CES that it's almost like Future World in a way where it's like, oh, well, we have this great concept and then everything is a concept. And if we create this buzz and you guys cover it, maybe we can actually get some money to actually do this. But then it's still going to cost you $1 million once it does eventually come out.
Yeah.
Are you saying CES is like the Epcot of the
Thank
computer,
you,
the
Joe.
Tech
I was
industry,
trying to set that up for somebody.
But doesn't have a really cool aquarium in it?
Yeah. Ooh.
Actually, it's in Vegas, so they have a nice aquarium somewhere there.
That's
yeah,
very
in
true.
Vegas. Okay, yeah. That yeah. narrows it down.
Yeah.
Some of the other things that they're going to be showing off at CES is things that are wearable. We've already heard from the watch, the Pebble, that they're going to be making their announcement there at the show. Also, devices that kind of bridge the gap between mobile and personal fitness and lifestyle devices like Fitbit and Jawbone. We're going to be seeing that as well. Also, a company by the name of Vuzix is promising something called smart glasses, kind of maybe off of Google goggles, perhaps.
Well, can I just say?
Yes, you can.
So today, just a few hours ago, I recorded the Linux Action Show for this week.
Shameless.
And my pick, every week I do a pick, that something that runs Linux, some hardware piece that runs Linux that you wouldn't know about. And I picked the Lakir watch. It's a Danish designed GPS sports watch. It runs Linux, and it's a Kickstarter project right now. It's got $99,000 in backing. This is wearable computing, Chase. It's a GPS. It runs a full Linux system. You have applications on this thing. They sync up with your computer. I think this is going to be a huge...
So people are going to start wearing stuff again?
Yeah. Well, maybe. Only it's, this time around, it's going to be sort of...
Are you wearing a watch?
I never wear a watch.
So, I mean, I never wear a watch either, yet I got on the Kickstarter project for the Pebble.
Well, because...
Because I like having that stuff. Remember MSN Direct? Remember that? It was,
no.
You don't remember MSN Direct?
Oh, it was great.
It was a computer on your wrist.
Yeah.
You got weather, you got traffic, you got sports, you got all this great information. The one thing that drew it back, first, you needed to have reception. It used FM radio signals, and it never updated in a timely manner.
Hmm.
It was before its time. I swear to God, I think Microsoft is always before their time. But I had one.
I gotta look this up now.
MSN Direct. You never heard of it?
They are before the time. See, what the difference is now is a lot of these components, there's sensors that are available to them thanks to smartphones that in the past would have required a data connection. But now we're talking GPS. We're talking altitude. We're talking even barometer. You're talking gyroscopes. All of these things can record while you're out and about. And then they'll sync with your smartphone, provide all of that data to your smartphone, and your smartphone's applications will be able to take advantage of that information. So the watch... The wristband, all those kinds of things are going to become accessories to your iPad and to your iPhone and to your Android phone.
You know, and that's where I'm really optimistic. I mean, the cool thing about these devices, they're low power, OLEDs, so they don't take a lot of power to show.
Right.
But by the way, John, I don't know if you noticed, but MSN Direct, FM radio-based service based on...
It was announced in October 2009. And this is weird. I've never heard of this.
Yeah, see, this is, before its time.
Yeah, exactly.
Actually, I had
2009? Are you kidding me? Like, what they were doing just seems like it was antiquated for 2009.
Yeah, but this was before low-power Bluetooth. This is before OLED. This is before...
Well, and it's important to note, too, John, that this was no cost to the end user.
Yeah.
This just broadcasted and didn't care who picked it up. It there was no two-way communication on it. So, I had a clock radio I got at some a prize at a LAN party, I think.
Oh, it had Direct
built in? It received MSN Direct for weather.
Yeah.
And for time updates and stuff like that. So it was really, really cool, except that it stopped working on January 1st, 2012.
Yeah.
it was a cool idea, and I think the best part about it was that it was basically free for the end user. As long as you bought a device that supported it, you didn't have to pay any annual or monthly charge for the data.
I recall there was a product that I think is still out called the Impulse Smartwatch, which is also around 2009, I believe, 2008, 2009, which did something very similar where it would actually connect to your phone and basically get you information from your phone as a watch on your wrist.
Oh, that's
very
nice.
Nice.
And that, to me, seems like it would be a heck of a lot more cooler than... what this MSN Direct thing is.
Can I just ask a hypothetical?
I can't believe we've gone back to 1999, but go ahead.
If Apple came out in March and said, we're announcing iPod or iPhone Watch, and it is a companion for $99 that connects to your iPhone or iPad.
I'm not surprised that they would do that. And you know why?
Yeah. Did you buy it?
Yes.
Yes. And you know why? You know why that they might do that? Look at the redesign of the iPod Nano.
They're making room.
Well, because they saw people taking the right. older versions and using them as watches. And they're thinking, oh gosh, what we need to do is we need to change it right now. So in a year and a half or 2 years, we can bring it back and have a wearable device mm-hmm. that syncs up with...
You got them doing this. You got Google doing Glass. You got big players
goggles,
getting this.
Goggles.
No, Google Glass.
Oh, Glass, yeah.
Glass.
Yeah.
You have... who knows what Microsoft's doing, but they've got all kinds of things in their R&D department. Plus, you have, you know, any given week, a different Kickstarter project that's all about wearable computing. Yeah. I can't imagine this isn't going to be a big topic at CES 2013.
No, I think it will be. I think we're going to see some... We're going to see a lot of wearable devices.
Yeah. I really think it's going to be
some
a huge
related
CES
to fitness,
yep.
some hooking up to your phones.
Right, right.
I'm really excited about it, actually.
It's going to be interesting. The PCs, all these things in the past synced with your PC. Now they're all going to sync with your smartphone.
And actually, how much did you say you think the iPhone or the Apple Watch would cost?
Oh, well, I mean, I
now
think
you said $100, right?
$99.
It's going to be $149
or $249.
$149, $249.
Yeah, it's going to be one of those. Yeah, for with extra storage, it'll be $349.
No, I mean, CES is always fun to watch. There's going to be plenty of providers, giving out coverage. We're not going to be there just because of the fact that...
It's a waste.
Well,
it kind of
is. It's not a waste.
I have minions that will be there.
It's not.
I have people who have contacted me. They're willing to be my minions.
It's a media event. All this... You know,
it is,
quite,
you're right.
Quite honestly, this is all just for the media. There mm-hmm. is absolutely nothing here just translating to the real world right now. For real people, it's all about media getting in on this and becoming something of what they can promote for themselves and the people that they cover to generate more money.
You know, Chase and I follow like the news cycles for a show we do called Unfiltered, and one of the things that we've noticed doing that show is like if you can sort of like capitalize on a PR wave, that's sort of worth more than regular PR dollars. Like, there's extra value there. So if you can be like, we did this at CES, right? You're sort of cashing in on a little extra momentum. And it's totally true. The whole news media is like, they're all sitting there like, okay, all right, Mr. CES, give us our announcements. We're going to print them all just as you tell us. And so they're just waiting for them. So I
and Gadget
it makes
already
sense.
Did that.
It makes sense, right? But at the end of the day.
Gadget, yeah.
I already have 50 items in the RSS feed.
Well,
that's just
exactly right.
Released.
Aren't we kind of looking at now in the internet age with The Verge and Engadget and all the sites like that? Isn't it kind of becoming the day and age where like we don't need these big conferences in the meat space to actually find out about this stuff? It seems
well,
old.
I think that's a good point, though. Is you know, CES used to be about innovation and introducing new products that were really cool and really compelling, and oftentimes we got as much interest out of the little guys as we did out of the big ones.
Totally.
You know, Samsung would introduce a big new TV and it'd be like, hey, Samsung introduced another TV.
Of course they did. Yeah.
But it would be some little company that introduces something really compelling and really cool.
Yeah.
But I think it's moved away from CES. I think that introduction has honestly, in part, moved to Kickstarter.
I agree.
We're
totally.
Seeing a major, major move on these huge projects that are really cool ideas, really innovative, over on Kickstarter, and they're going to disappear from CES if they haven't already.
And when they're on Kickstarter, they're making a big splash. They're getting a ton of PR. They're getting, and on top of all of that, they're getting
get
funding.
They get more money from
yeah,
doing
yeah.
Money.
They're not just
they
they're not
from
they're not
CES.
Paying out of pocket for PR and for a booth space.
Because people aren't going to go to CES and
getting
just hand the money.
To give them money.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
But see, CES is typically for companies that are already well-established, big-name companies for their big-name devices. Granted, I know they have that small independent row, and we run into them at E3, and we also run into them at PAX, of the smaller developers, the independent developers that can't afford big mm-hmm. booth space.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to see the Kickstarter-type places at CES because they can't afford to be there.
Right.
Well, some of them can.
Well, most of them can't.
You have to remember, like, a company like... a good example, since we were talking about smartwatches, is the MetaWatch that came out. The guys who did that were bound to Fossil previously. And Fossil definitely would have enough money to set up.
Oh, sure, Fossil.
At CES.
Yeah.
But then the question is, can you get a company like that to do it? Do they recognize the value?
Well, Fossil didn't because they spun that company out and now they're making their own thing.
Yeah.
But they didn't sell any watches because they didn't know how to market it right.
And to be honest with you guys, I'd rather have the action on Kickstarter. I'd rather be able to get the stuff throughout the year instead of having to wait till CES. To me, it's better this way. And it'll be
interesting
to see
what
happens.
A bit of a risk there because, I mean, Kickstarter inherently has risk involved with it because you're basically giving people venture capital.
Right.
Yeah.
That you might not necessarily see anything come out of it because they might not be able to deliver it.
Yeah.
The one thing I know we're kind of gone off on a tangent, but the one thing I don't want to see Kickstarter turn into, and I know Kickstarter was trying to turn this down a little bit, was making it a marketplace for people to pre-buy products and not to really help foster innovation.
Kind of how I use it a little bit.
But that's the inherent danger of it, though.
Well, that's kind of, I mean, that's a legitimate danger then because I tell you, like I mentioned, my Linux pick, it was this watch. And I kind of thought, you know, if I buy this now, or actually even a better example, I buy games through Kickstarter a lot. Like I go in, I throw in money a little bit early, I get it at a good price, and then I get the beta, and then I get the game after that, and that's kind of how I've been getting some games lately. So kind of how I am using Kickstarter now, and I don't know if that's necessarily a bad thing because it gets them the funding and it gets me some actual results. To me, maybe that's not what Kickstarter wanted to accomplish, but at the end of the day, as an end user, I'm happy with it.
Yep. So just to let everybody know, tomorrow, and actually it's kicked off, actually as of today. So kicked off today, tomorrow, and Tuesday is the New Media Expo presented by Blogworld. We're not there, obviously, because we're here. However, tomorrow evening is the Podcast Awards, and we will be streaming those live on our website. It kicks off Monday, tomorrow night, the 7th at 6:30 p.m. Pacific Time, Pacific Standard Time. And I'll be here. Joe says he should be home by work from work.
At 6:30. I probably won't be.
Oh, you won't be. Okay.
No, not at 6:30.
Oh my gosh! Maybe he could join you in progress.
He could. I'll be here.
I could.
If there's only some way for like you guys to talk over the internet.
I mean, if there's a program that could provide solid service. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But we'll have live coverage. Now we're not going to be at the Podcast Awards, but we're crossing our fingers and we're throwing a Hail Mary. We'll see if we win the gaming category. I doubt it. But Minecraft Me is nominated in the gaming category, which is really cool. So we'll have that available. Leo Laporte is the keynote speaker at Blogworld, and he's presenting, I think, at the Podcast Awards. So let's move on to some gaming stuff, and it's now time to bow our heads, folks, because Sony has stopped shipping the PlayStation 2 in Japan, nearly 13 years after launch. No word on the U.S. yet.
Are they still shipping the PS1?
I don't know. Yeah, PS1's still going strong and Atari 2600.
It is interesting, though. The PlayStation 2 seems to have been the breakout success of the most
huge.
I mean, like, you can
of our generation, I would say.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I was wondering if it was too grand, but I was going to say, even looking back at the N64, maybe even the Super Nintendo 32. Was it 32? I think so. Going back through all of that, the PlayStation 2 has sold nothing like nobody else. No Xbox has sold as much as the PlayStation 2.
Nothing.
No Nintendo
device.
Nothing
has come close.
It has been phenomenal. And I don't know if you recall, but one of the true key successes to the PlayStation 2, if you remember, was actual DVD playback.
That's right.
It actually supported DVD standard.
I remember when it was PlayStation 2 versus Xbox.
Yeah.
And one of the things is you didn't have to buy a separate dongle.
Right.
You got it right out of the box, and it was DVD out of the box.
Yeah.
And it worked. Do you not remember that, John?
I don't remember any of this stuff.
I know. You don't even have it. Did you even – have you ever owned a PS2?
No.
Joe, did you?
Yes.
And Chris?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
See, look at 3 out of 4 gamers. There you go. There's your stats right there. Now, there's no word yet on if Sony's going to start ceasing production in other parts of the world. And stop selling in other regions. But in Japan, it's all over with.
Does this matter so much when you have PlayStation 3s that are PS2 compatible?
Well,
the PS3 Slim, however, I believe is not PS2.
It's not. No, I have.
So it does actually kind
of
matter.
So what they did with the PS3s is the first generation of PS3 FATs had a chip inside. They actually had the chipset for the PS2.
Right, right.
And then it turned into software emulation.
Yeah.
And then it turned into no emulation.
Right, right. Like, you guys just turned off the emulation?
Okay. And they got rid of that Linux thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I know.
Well, this is just like Windows XP. I mean, there's got to be an expiration date somewhere.
It's not like they have to support PS2.
Yeah.
There's an incredible library of great games for the PS2 that we'll never see on the PS3.
When you can do it via software emulation at very little hardware cost because the PlayStation 3 is so much more
it's
powerful.
It's that cell processor.
There's
Chris.
Very actual, you know, in terms of cost, there's very little cost in supporting it. It's basically you just don't want to anymore.
Now remember, they're still selling them. They're just not selling them in Japan anymore. But PlayStation 2, 153 million units sold. But very close second, Nintendo DS with 152.5.
Well, they got nothing on McDonald's with 99 billion served.
That's over 99 billion.
But you know, at the end of the day, does anybody know how old Nintendo is? Do anybody have any guesses?
They're very old.
They're really old, yeah.
The company?
Yeah, the company.
Company was founded, I want to say, like 1899 or something.
You're ruining it, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they made playing cards.
Yeah, exactly. 1889.
Way off track.
1889, September 23rd.
Sorry.
I want to get controversial now.
Okay.
I'm going to get a little unfilterish.
All right.
All right.
This is unfiltered.
Episode. This is unfiltered. Episode 225.
I think it's interesting to note, I posted this in the IRC. PS2 sold 153.6 million units so far. It was introduced in the year 2000. The Nintendo DS was introduced in 2004, also still for sale. It has sold 152.5 million. So it's only 1.1 million units behind the PS2, but it was released 4 years later. I just think that's kind of funny.
Yeah. Well, also, when the PlayStation 2 came out, it was, what, $300? When the DS came out, it was, what, $149, $199?
I don't remember now. Yeah.
So let's get a little controversial, shall we? Now, honestly, you know, our hearts do break for the families in Connecticut after that just tragic, tragic mass shooting of all those kids and teachers and the principal there in Connecticut. Now, we've talked on other shows like on Unfilter. You know, Chris and I have had conversations about video games and we got real political about it. And we don't usually get too political on this show. But this is one of those situations where I'd love to hear the panel's opinion on this specific thing. A Connecticut town is having a drive that is going to collect and destroy violent video games. On January 12th, a group in a town called Southington will host a, quote, violent video games return program where if they want people to turn in any type of violent media, in return, they'll get a $25 gift certificate from the local Chamber of Commerce, and the media itself will be destroyed and placed in the town dumpster for appropriate permanent disposal. Now, they're wondering is quickly how used games lose value and the cheaper costs of CDs and DVDs if the same gift certificates are handed out for everything. So let's say, for example, you have like Madden NFL 2005. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, but that's not violent because I'm sorry. It's football, and football's an American pastime, and it's not in any way, shape, or form
you're right.
Violent.
You're Grand Theft Auto Vice City. You know, it's an old title. Probably cost me $10 to pick it up on the used market. So I turned it in for $25 in gift certificates. I don't know if it's an even exchange.
Or just go between where they're picking up and the local GameStop and buy all of the old games they have. And, you know, for like $5 off in the $5 value bin and just keep trading them in. I wonder if you can get away with
that. The meme has been happening, you know, between, you know, we need to get rid of guns because if we get rid of guns, this kind of tragedy won't happen in the future. We need to get rid of violent movies because if we get rid of violent movies, this tragedy won't happen in the future. If we get rid of video games and violent video games, this won't happen in the future. Well, I have a feeling this is a real softball of a question. Mm-hmm. But, you know, will something like this really make a difference? Chris?
Well, Chase, you have to follow the money on this one. And you have to look at who's behind this. And unfortunately, and I'm not trying to make a political statement here. I'm reading the article right now.
Yeah.
The funding behind some of this initiative is coming from the NRA. And the NRA wants to blame violent video games because they fill an awfully good gap and scapegoat instead of guns. And unfortunately, what the reality is that you can't just blame one particular thing, games, violent media, right, movies, anything like that. And all of this, all that this does, all of all, only thing that happens here is these drives to turning video games. It reminds me of parallels to turn in your guns. Turn in your guns, everybody.
Well, because L.A. just did this. Yes. Los Angeles just did this.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because guns are violent weapons that can kill people. Well, yeah. And apparently video games are too. Now, I've played violent video games my entire life. And, you know, to be honest, I did kill 20 people before I came over here to do the show.
You had an incredible kill streak, by the way.
Oh,
very good,
dude,
stuff.
It was great. I think I got a high score in real life, which is awesome, by the way.
You got an achievement unlocked.
Yeah, I have a little achievement. I got a little book. I put all my achievements in there, and I draw little stars for myself because I'm a killer because I play video games. And so, unfortunately, I think all of this just kind of continues to propagate that meme that video games are going to make you a killer. Parents, get your kids to turn your video games. Video games are going to hurt people. And it's an unfortunate meme to propagate.
John, what do you think?
Yes.
What is your opinion?
This is, you know, this is interesting because I don't know which study it was, but if I recall correctly, there was a study a while ago, like last year, saying that violent video games really hasn't changed how violent people are compared to, you know, when there really weren't violent video games in the 50s or 60s. If you look at 50s or 60s compared to now, the crime stats are basically pretty much the same, regardless of whether or not people have violent video games or not.
Actually, our crime is down quite a bit. Crime has been down.
Right.
The trend for crime is actually...
Unless you're in Detroit.
Well.
Or Chicago.
There's a few areas. Yeah, but crime in the United States...
It's completely stupid, because if you think about it, quite frankly, gun control, in my opinion, doesn't really do a whole lot of good. A prime example of what I'm talking about is Chicago, where they do have strict gun control laws, yet they still have a lot of violent crime committed with guns. So in a way, it's to me, when you look at that area of gun control, it doesn't seem to really work.
I, you know, this is just my personal opinion. This is not my opinion of the network or the panel. But, you know, I support the freedom of choosing and the freedom of if I want to have a gun, I should be able to have one. If I want to be able to play a violent video game and have fun and have it as a stress relief, I should be able to do that. Because
yeah,
I know
let me try and make my point a little bit
please
more clear
do.
Here. But
yeah.
What I'm trying to say is that even if you do try to ban something, people are still going to find a way to do what they want to do. Even if you ban violent video games, people are going to find some sort of release regardless of whether or not you ban the violent video games.
It's called the Pirate Bay and the Internet, and people will just download them and play them anyways. You can't ban video games.
Yeah.
It's impossible.
Well, no, they're not trying to ban video games. They want to ban violent video games.
Right.
Because violent video games is corrupting the youth of America because parents decide not to get involved in their kids' lives. They decide to, here, kid, have a game, sit in front of the TV I go and do my coke.
You know what else we ban? Is we ban pornography. Meanwhile, kids have unlimited access to pornography. We ban? Alcohol. Meanwhile, kids drink alcohol like nobody's
business. And
marijuana.
And
marijuana smoking is at the highest.
Pharmaceuticals, prescription drugs. Keep going?
Thank you.
Yeah.
So it does nothing. In fact, by banning it, you make it an elite substance that people want more.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's not going to change anything. And this kind of publicity that we see what's happening here. I mean, if you look at the quote on the page, is in big red letters, it says, our message is fairly simple. This is coming from the organization that is trying to get the games off the streets.
Hello, everybody.
Our message is fairly simple. Have a conversation with your child. Guess what? You can have that conversation with your child by not trying to bribe and get people to turn in games, because that's not the answer. The answer is you're just trying to push your agenda to blame something that is not the cause.
It's almost like the human brain has the ability to tell the difference between reality and a simulation. And like almost as if the human brain knows when something's not real. Maybe I'm getting crazy here.
Joe, you're quiet over there. I mean, what do you think about what Southington, Connecticut is doing?
Hello, everybody. Who's got the soundboard?
No, that's just Chris.
Okay. I don't know. Yeah, I would say this is it's a little ridiculous. It doesn't make any sense to be getting rid of violent games. I think the even more than the argument of controlling violent games should be the argument of having parents be aware of what that means. And maybe it's the problem is not even that it's parents who need to be aware of what the games are. It's that we need to name them something different. By calling them games, people think they're for kids. And if we called them violent, or if instead of calling them video games, you call them digital computer experiences, now it's not a game anymore. Now it's something else.
But let's just draw the comparison to movies. Like Finding Nemo is a movie, and so is some sort of horror movie. They're all movies.
Yeah, but the difference is, at least my understanding is, the difference from an individual using it or from an individual watching it is when they're watching a movie, it's a one-sided experience. They are receiving that. When they're playing a video game or playing that sort of thing, it's two-sided. They're controlling the action that goes on screen. You can play through Grand Theft Auto and not kill a single person. And I mean, you can't play the whole game, but you can get away with playing most of it. You can explore the world and do that sort of thing without running over pedestrians or killing hookers. But a lot of people, especially kids, seem to choose that direction. And the same is true for a lot of games. There are ways to play some games that where really the violence is very much diminished. But it's all based on the choice of the player. When you watch a movie, you don't have that choice. The movie doesn't stop in the middle and say, hey, do you want us to kill this guy or do you want us to let this guy live? You know, it's a question of what the director or the producer, whoever.
But in that argument, it almost sounds like the video game is less of a danger to the children.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that, well, yes and no, right? The video game is more of a danger because the child can choose to be as violent as they want.
Mm.
The movie is less or is may or may not be as bad because they don't have the option.
To blame
it's something that's chosen for them before they start watching it.
Mm.
I think it's this issue with calling these things video games. Parents then by default, especially those who aren't now us in the age that we are, we're getting to the point where having kids is not unrealistic, and having kids that are old enough to play these games is not unrealistic. That we know better, you know.
Joe,
we've been brought up in this
kid?
World,
yeah.
And our people and younger are going to be aware of this and know what violent video games are. But people who are older than that may not necessarily realize there's a big difference when you call it a video game between Mario and Grand Theft Auto.
It's frustrating as you know, we can see the difference. We know the difference because we're experienced in what we're talking about. You know, we're gamers, we're geek guys. We really enjoy this stuff, and we see for what it is. You know, as an outlet, as entertainment. And really, it doesn't feed on maybe some bad mental thoughts that, you know, we don't have, hopefully, Joe.
but you single me out.
I'm just messing with you, man. but what happens here is, I think this all comes down to, honestly, is communication and becoming informed and being educated. And unfortunately, a lot of parents, they're not doing that. And, you know, They're so busy in their daily lives that they go out and buy Grand Theft Auto 4 because they feel because their kid wants it, because their kid played it at their friend's house and they thought it was great. They're 13 years old and they're playing a mature title, and then they freak out. I know I'm kind of merging two games here. They're freaking out because there's a simulated sex scene in the game. You know, hot coffee mod or whatever. I think it comes down to communication and being informed. And don't blame the game. Just like don't blame the gun. I mean, if someone has a mental issue and their tendencies are to be more violent or whatever, maybe they need to get a psychologist. Maybe they need to talk about their problems. Maybe they need to have open parents and open people in their lives to say, hey, is there something wrong with me because I have these thoughts? But, you know, no one embraces that kind of stuff. Everybody embraces.
You know what this also kind of goes back to, in a way, yeah. What you're talking about? It's this whole Newtown, Connecticut shooting. It's the fact that you have a mentally ill person that's not getting any sort of help.
Yeah.
Well, and it's, I think it's important to note, you touched on this, Chase. It's not the weapon or the what's going on that is the problem. It's the person who has it. What's been glossed over in U.S. media is that almost at the same time as what happened in Connecticut, in China, there was a stabbing spree
where
a guy stabbed
guys?
22 school children and a teacher. So it's not banning something or, you know, I mean, if we talk about banning something because it's bad for people who decide they want to use it badly, then before too long, we're going to have registered chef's knives. I mean,
yeah,
it's just going to reach that point. And it it's not, that's not the issue. The issue is not what the tools are or what the things are. The issue is the people who are using them, right, or experiencing them.
Yep. I agree 100%. I was listening to talk radio last week, and the hosts were talking about guns, and one of the listeners wrote in to the show, and he says, you know, I'd be more than willing to take my guns, sell them back to the government if they bought them from me at fair market value, and if they could guarantee that a bad guy would not have a gun. If they can guarantee that a criminal would not have a gun, then I'm okay with that. But the problem is, the only thing that these laws and these restrictions do is hamper law-abiding people. It's not going to stop someone who's bad from getting what they want. Guns, video games, anything illegal, if someone wants it bad enough and they have enough money or they have enough motivation, they're going to get it regardless. And it's not.
And they can still go over to their friend's house and play the violent video game.
Exactly. Hey, you're not going
to
stop it.
To the chat room's point, I would give more credit to video games being the leading cause for obesity than I would give credit for video games being the leading cause for violence.
Dance, Dance Revolution!
Well, there's some exceptions, obviously, and Kinect and all of those fun accessories are working.
Joe loves
on that.
The Kinect, by the way.
But I'm just pointing out that if you want to point to real world impact of video games, it would be obesity. Probably not violence. Just my observation.
Now, if I'm playing Minecraft, you know, I do need to eat in Minecraft, and I always get a steak.
Absolutely.
So,
you have the steak in Minecraft? Come on, spend a little bit of time. Bake a cake.
That's true. And have some cookies and milk.
Yeah, there you go.
All right. Well, very awesome heated discussion about video games and violence, and got a little unfiltered style, which is fine with me. I think that conversation on this show is very appropriate because a lot of you guys out there are gamers, yep, and you guys should be informed about these things that are happening out there so you can be informed and make a difference.
Mm.
So, you guys, let's move on to our picks of the week. Now, these are neat items that we like here at geekgamer.tv. These could be gadgets. These could be a cool website. It really could be anything. It just gives that person on the panel here a few minutes to chat about what they like. And I'm going to go with our guest here in the studio, Mr. Chris Fisher from Jupiter Broadcasting. Chris, what's your pick of the week?
All right, Chase. Well, my pick of the week is not totally original, but...
All right, very fine.
If folks have not tried it yet, I want to come on here and be the one that convinces them to finally pull the trigger. And that is Star Wars Angry Birds, and you can get it for the iPhone, the iPad.
It's
Android.
On everything.
It's on everything. Yeah. It's a great app across all of them. And I think that's maybe the best place for me to start. So this is above and beyond a fantastic user experience across all of the different platforms you might use it. But on top of that, it's a lot of fun. If you're a Star Wars fan, there's a lot of nods. And it's not done in like the cheesy, crappy way where they like they water down the IP, and I always hate that.
Right.
It's done in the respectful way that makes you kind of like remember back and love it. And I'll tell you, on top of that, it's gotten my son into the Star Wars in a way I never thought was possible before. It's got all of the cool sound effects. Like, Chase, you were just playing a little bit of the music there. They've got the licensed IP from LucasArts, so that's great. They've got all the sound effects. And what's neat about it is if you played Star Wars Angry Birds, they combine a little bit of the physics elements and the gravity stuff with this in Star Wars Angry Birds, where you kind of got to aim with the regular, like, you know, Angry Birds Rio or Angry Birds where it's on ground and stuff like that. So it's a combination of everything they've done, all skinned in the Star Wars IP with the Star Wars sound effects and certain Star Wars unlocks. It's a lot of fun. And if you really get into it, they've got a whole plushy accessory line around and all that kind
of course
stuff.
They do.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's very pretty, very
so
nice.
Angry Birds Star Wars Edition, and what's fun is you've got a Luke Skywalker bird, you've got a Han Solo bird, you've got a Chewbacca bird, you've got a Princess Leia, R2-D2, the Wookiee, Obi-Wan, Darth. They're all in there. It's the whole Star Wars story. You start at Hoth, you progress to the Death Star, and you go all the way through. It's the whole Star Wars story told in Angry Birds form, and it's available for any device you want. And you can even get it for free if you want to get nagged by ads all the time.
Very, very nice.
Mm-hmm.
$2.99.
If you want to, and I would actually recommend just paying for it,
yeah.
get the negs out of the way. Yeah. On the Android market, it's seen nearly 500,000 installs. It was released on November 29th, so it's not brand new. You do need Android 2.2 or above or iOS 5.
By the way, on an unrelated story, and this is not just Angry Birds Star Wars, this is Angry Birds everything.
Okay.
30 million downloads of Angry Birds over Christmas week.
Yeah, every other iOS device sold downloaded Angry Birds.
Crazy.
So if you bought an iOS device and I bought an iOS device, one of us downloaded Angry Birds.
That's just nuts. Christmas Day, 17.4 million. On one day. Not bad. All right, nice pick, Mr. Chris.
Thank you, sir.
I love Angry Birds. I have Angry Birds space. Now I need to get Star Wars.
This is the best one they've ever done.
Awesome. John Bubb, you're up next, buddy.
Yeah.
What's your pick of the week?
My pick of the week, it's an application that a lot of tech guys are probably familiar with. It's called TeamViewer, and it's for remote administration, remote support, going into your computer when you're somewhere else. And it's a great application because it simply works just so well that it's awesome. It's free for personal use. If you are a commercial business, they do ask you for a license and all that stuff. But for free and private use, it's freaking amazing. If you got a family member that needs some help with tech support, it's really great. You can have them download an application right from the website and just have them run that application, and you can remotely log into their computer and control the computer just so that you can help them figure out what their problem is or fix it for them. It's so cool. I took a trip over the holiday break, and I used this program, and it was just amazing. They've got iPhone and Android applications, which is really cool. Let me see if I can load up here on my Android tablet here real quick.
Yeah, what's really cool is you could manage a Windows box or a Mac from vice versa. So I could be on a Mac or a Linux box, and I can remote into a Windows machine, or I could be on my Android tablet, and I can remote into a Windows machine. So if you are on a Mac and you've got family members who are on Windows and you need to help them, it works, or vice versa. It's really cool.
I don't know if you'll be able to see, but you can see I have a list of computers here that I have access to. This is like all the stuff for GFQ. I can log into all their computers. So if I'm actually away from home and I suddenly need to do something over at GFQ, I can remotely log into one of the computers over at the GFQ network, put a show on there, do whatever it is that I need to do. Or if I need to log into my computer at home and I'm away, I can do that as well, because I was away on vacation for a few days and I wanted to grab some files that are at home. And this is a great way to be able to log into my computer when I'm away, and it's a free application. It works great on both Android and iPhone. I use both of them, and it works great on your computer as well. And one of the cool things that I really like about TeamViewer is the fact that you don't have to worry about any of this firewall stuff, configuring ports, forwarding them, or anything like that. It just simply works. All you have to do is tell your friend to download it, install it, whatever it is you want to do with it. It's so easy to set up.
Well, you know, I as an alternative that I use LogMeIn Free, which works just as well. They also have Android and iOS apps. But the cool thing about TeamViewer is you don't have to have that pre-installed. You can direct your user to the website, and then they just give you the TeamViewer code, and then, bam, you're right in there. And it's great, great. And the cool thing is there is a pro version if you're using it for more business-type stuff, you know, and you're multiple PCs. But if you're you're a consumer, there is a free version. And there's no ads, right, John? There's no adware or bloatware installed with it. It's just the program, right?
All there is a nag screen every time that you log out. If you've been connected for, like, over 5 minutes and you disconnect, it will pop up a nag screen saying that this is for free and private use only.
Okay.
That's the only nag screen that you have on. Otherwise, it's completely free and very easy to use.
Very cool. Awesome. Well, there's your pick, you guys. TeamViewer. If you want more information, visit teamviewer.com.
I've actually tried a lot of other remote applications out there, but quite frankly, TeamViewer is one of the best.
Yeah, TeamViewer is good. LogMeIn's good. I use LogMeIn on my dad's computer and all my systems.
Joinme.com.
There's many, many providers out there, but TeamViewer is
great.
John's pick. It's a good pick. Mm-hmm. Nice pick.
Mm-hmm.
Joseph Falby, our resident Minecraft tutor and host of Minecraft Me. You're up next. What's your pick of the week?
So this is kind of an old thing. I didn't realize how old it was when I picked it, but it's still really cool, and it's a great idea. It's called the Slurper.
What?
Anyway, it's kind of weird. What it is it's a Wi-Fi, sort of a Wi-Fi stealing access point. So the idea is you're at home. Say you live in a city, and you have a whole lot of open Wi-Fi networks around you, and you don't want to have internet at home at all. Well, what this device allows you to do is it'll actually connect up to 6 available Wi-Fi connections, and it provides you with 9 Ethernet jacks on the front, and it'll connect all those together to give you all the bandwidth total from all those 6 connections.
Want.
So, yeah, exactly. So you end up connecting to 6 Wi-Fis. Each one maybe is 5, 10 megs. Now you have a connection that is 6 times that, so 60 megs.
This
is
real.
Sort of connection.
This is real, right?
Yeah, this is a real product. The only issue with it is in some areas, it's illegal to use someone else's internet connection. So there's some question about whether or not that's whether it's legal or not. It's yeah. So it is real. So they did make it. I can't tell if it's available now or not. But the other problem with it is the cost. It's going to be almost $1,400 for one of these things, because it does have a full little a customized Linux box inside of it. But I thought it was just a cool idea, a cool contraption. Came up by or developed by a Dutch hacker named Mark Hoekstra, I just think that's it's just really cool. But again, if you do decide to make one of these or buy one of these, you're using it at your own risk, because it would be illegal in some places. But well, still, a cool idea.
We don't necessarily condone it, but it looks very cool.
It's a really cool idea, and if you see the picture of the box, it's got these Wi-Fi antennas sticking out every angle, which I
threw a picture of it. It looks awesome.
I want one.
I just want one to have sitting here.
Yeah,
I'm not going to connect it to anything. I just wanted to sit here and look awesome on the desk.
Yeah. I want to just try it for a minute, see how it works. Like, go downtown, like New York or Vegas.
Or Seattle,
Seattle, yeah.
That'd be awesome. Just, you know, in one of the high rises, you know, a bunch of apartments around you or something like that, you know, people have open Wi-Fi. Same thing.
Awesome stuff. Well, my pick of the week is a small piece of hardware.
Oh, boy.
I know.
Making me spend money.
But this is something.
It's a lightsaber.
No, it's.
Oh.
No.
Oh.
No.
Then why do I have this lightsaber?
It's just for fun. I just mess around with it.
Okay. Yeah,
thanks for putting that away.
Sorry.
No, my pick of the week is a piece of hardware that's very useful for a musician or a podcaster or someone who wants a very easy way of getting audio in and out of their computer. This is the Behringer UCA202 U-Control USB audio interface. It looks like this. But in case if you can't see it well, I'll give you a better picture of it right there. It plugs into your computer via USB. It doesn't need any additional power source. It's powered over USB. And it has a stereo RCA input and a stereo RCA output. And it also has an optical output as well.
Ooh.
And the cool thing about this little device, and I use a couple of these right now, is this is how I bring in audio from Joe, for example, into my soundboard.
Mr. Chase.
Yes, Chris.
Question.
Yeah.
You have a sound card built into your motherboard.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you just use the sound card built into your motherboard? Because you've already paid for that.
That's a great question. Well, the first thing is the sound card on my motherboard usually only has a 3/8 inch jack. It doesn't give me RCA outputs.
Right. You mean the man's outputs.
The man's.
Right.
The other problem that you might run into with some certain machines is even if you're using a filter, you know, like one of these that I have right here, a ground loop isolator, you will still hear that system noise.
Yeah.
You'll hear your hard drive because of the card that's physically into your system.
Yep.
The cool thing about this device is you get a straight digital interface,
and it breaks
audio.
It out, right?
It does.
It removes It's physically removing the electrical components away from the other electrical components that cause interference.
Yes.
It comes down to just isolation and moving the sound components away from the other components in your machine to get better sound.
Yep. And the great thing, too, is it doesn't require separate power.
Ah.
And the best part, it's really, really cheap.
Oh.
You can get this on Amazon Prime with, you know, two-day shipping. For free for $25.
Nice, Chase. Nice.
So I have a couple of these. They also come in designer red if you wanted these. But if you're a musician and you want to, say, record guitar playing and you want to get your guitar into your computer.
Nope.
RCA jack's way to go. This is the way to do it. And you can actually adjust the volume and there's monitor. And you can plug in your headphones.
Now, how does that work in Windows? You just plug that bad boy
plug
in?
Plug and play.
That Windows operating system just automatically detects
gives
it, huh?
Gives you the driver. You can download Behringer specific driver for this, but you don't need
and
to.
And Behringer is a well-known name for like soundboards, all kinds of sound devices.
Yep. And cool. The best thing I love about it really is the price. You can't beat $30 or less. I know some professional gamers will use this kind of device if they want to use their own headphones, like say these pair of Sonys like this, and they want a separate kind of interface, the non-interfere.
I've had a buddy who he's got his headphones plugged into the audio jack on his PC,
right?
And then he's Skyping with his friends that he's playing with the whole time.
On a separate interface. Yep.
And he's using the separate USB interface for his Skype.
And that's another thing too. A lot of people who may want to do like I would say kind of like a mix minus in a way without a soundboard.
Yeah, exactly.
If you have two interfaces, you can set Skype to a second interface.
Yep.
And this is a cheap way. So this is $30, okay? Or you could spend $100. I don't know if it's $100 anymore. But this is a Sound Blaster USB sound card.
Right, yeah, the creative deal, yeah.
This, you know, this gives you so many inputs and outputs, but this, I think last time I checked, I don't remember.
145, something like that. Yeah, I don't know what ridiculous. It is now, but when it was new, that's about it was almost 200 when it was brand new.
So we'll have an Amazon link in our show notes. So if you use that link, we'll always try to point it to the cheapest. But if you find one cheaper, that's great. But if you use our link, a portion of that will help support the show. I love it. It's the UCA 202. And if you want one in red, they also make them in red.
I totally, you know, as an audio person, I totally recommend anything that gets the sound outside the motherboard.
Yes.
Absolutely recommend it.
Unless you have a really good motherboard.
Now,
you might.
I've bought $300 motherboards with the ultimate sound system. That
you
mean just,
but you didn't have the Fatality?
I tell you,
audio.
Man, I have spent money trying to fix
it. You didn't upgrade
this.
To the Fatality audio?
I have spent money trying to fix it. I built a PC all around audio recording, and then I ended up buying an external USB sound card. I spent serious money trying to fix this problem. You just do it.
Did you just say Fatality, Joe?
No. I would never. Fatality. Ever besmirch Fatality that way.
That's
okay.
Too funny. That's too funny.
That would be wrong for you to do that, Joe.
I would never.
Never.
No. I really like Fatality and all he represents.
Fatality is a really great system.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Well, what a great show this week, you guys. Well, that about wrap things up. I want to say a big thank you to all of our guests that we've had this week, starting off with this guy first here. In the studio, Mr. Chris Fisher, and why don't you take a minute and tell people where they can find you, what you do for
chase.
A living?
Let's just cut to the chase. Cut to the chase, right? Yeah. People should go check out the Unfiltered Show because it stars you and I.
Oh, and, shameless plug!
Go over to JupiterBroadcasting.com and listen to an Unfiltered and learn a little something.
And here's a screenshot of our last episode, episode 31, which was named Cliffhanger. Great job on the Photoshop.
Thank you, sir.
I love it.
Inspired by my art director, Mr. Chase Nunes.
Thank you.
Obama hanging from a cliff. And if you want to know what's really going on with the fiscal cliff and what the real story is there, you can watch that episode.
Great
show. And you know what's funny is it's almost a tragedy because there's so much more than what the title even suggests.
Yeah,
right?
There's so much involved in that.
Yeah. But one for your audience that might be hit is our violent video games episode.
That's right. That was, here it is, Killer Video Games episode number 30.
Yeah, where we kind of tackled the whole, are these violent video games responsible for some of these shootings we've seen recently? And also, we kind of looked at the media's angle on trying to pin the blame on video games in sort of maybe, you know, other things that are going on. So I really thought that was a great episode.
Are you on Twitter as well?
Twitter.com/ChrisLAS.
And you tweet outside the realm of fun.
I do. You know, I tweet our show stuff. I also every now and then, I try to respond. I can respond to a lot more tweets than I can emails. So if people have any questions or they have any suggestions, go to Twitter.com/ChrisLAS. Hit me up. But you can also just see the feeds of some of our announcements and stuff like that.
Awesome stuff. John Bubb. You blog, and you do stuff with GFQ. You're their technical director.
I am GFQ. Come on, let's face it.
I should face it. You are Andrew Zarian.
The network. The network.
You are the network. That, you know, that's your name from now on. John, the network. You are the network. But in all honesty, when you're not doing GFQ, what else are you doing, or where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Suncast. That's Suncast with a K, not a C. And you can also find my music blog, which is Amadeus, AmaDais.com. I go on YouTube. There's a lot of people on YouTube that do like cover songs, and they're really, really good. So I like to find some of the great ones out there, put them on a website so that everybody can discover them.
Is Suncast.com yours too?
Yes, it is.
I didn't know that. Well, there you go.
Yep. I don't put much on there other than crap, though, so...
way to hype yourself up, man.
It's basically just links to me on Tech News Weekly, so...
Oh, that's true enough. Tech News Weekly, did you guys have a show on Friday?
Well, we did not. I think we're back this week, though.
Sweet. Can't wait for that. I occasionally moonlight on that show, too.
Mm-hmm.
Joseph...
We're actually looking to have a few more guests on this year, too.
Oh, that'd be nice. Like who? Like Leo Laporte and...
Just to everybody in general, we want to have more guests this year than ever before.
Than ever before.
Yeah.
That's a New Year's.
Not that it's a high bar to have more guests on our show.
I was going to say, that sounds like a New Year's resolution if I ever did hear one.
Yeah, I guess you could call it that.
Joseph Falvey, my awesome friend and co-host of the number one video games podcast in the video games category on iTunes. Ba-dum-bum. Joseph Falvey. And Joe, hey, Joe. Joe. Hey, Joe.
Yeah.
during the week, where can people find you?
Well, usually I'm working.
I meant on the internet.
Oh, well, I do have a Twitter account, but I pretty much never use it. It's at Falby, or you can always email me through the show, josephgeekgamer.tv. I generally will respond to some things.
I like how difficult Joe's being at the end of the show. He's like, he's making you work for this ending chase.
You know what, though? I love Joe's Twitter page. It's as simple as it can get. Joseph, and then at Falby underneath, Newburgh, yep. Oregon. That's it.
Nothing nice. Else.
Not even a link to, not even the homepage set to Minecraft me. It's just Joseph Falby, Newburgh, Oregon.
I can change those things.
It should be. Should, you know what you ought to put in there, Joe, is lightsaber owner.
But I don't have any lightsabers.
I hear your lightsaber right now.
But he did take a picture of the space shuttle.
I did. Yeah, the last thing I did was took a photo of the space shuttle.
There's Endeavor.
When I was down there at California.
Ouch. Sunset. Joe, how do you top that? I think you got to wait till you can top that. You can't post
well,
you
I have
can
a,
top
I
that.
Have a whole bunch of pictures of the space shuttle that I took with more than just my iPhone.
Yeah,
so,
but that's played out. Now you got to top that by like going to D.C. or you need to do something else momentous. I mean,
or
if you,
CES.
If like, you just tweet about like a sandwich, that's going to be disappointing at this point.
Well, you'll be gratified to know I have never in my life tweeted about a sandwich.
Okay,
so,
good man.
That's not going to be a problem.
Good man, good man.
And speaking of sandwiches, I'm getting hungry. you guys, if you want, I don't know why you would, but you can. You can follow me on Twitter at Nunes, N-U-N-E-S. I tweet every day. I was tweeting a lot today about the football game, the Seattle Seahawks.
Oh, who would want to miss that?
The Washington Redskins.
Something about hand egg? What?
Hand egg, yes.
You should tweet about a lightsaber.
That's soccer, right?
That's soccer. Also, by the way, you guys, you can head over to our website at geekgamer.tv where you can find all of our previous episodes of Geek Gamer Weekly, Minecraft Me. We have an awesome, awesome community of forums that is always vibrant and always going strong as well at geekgamer.tv. TV. And hey, one final note, just let everybody know, we are now on a new channel on YouTube, so if you haven't done so yet, please subscribe to us, youtube.com/geekgamernetwork, all one word, youtube.com/geekgamernetwork, and we appreciate it if you would subscribe to that, and you don't have to subscribe to my personal channel anymore if you don't want to. That's it, you guys. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll have special live coverage of the Podcast Awards tomorrow, Monday, the 7th of January. And if you can't make it to that, our next live show will be Thursday night for another edition of Minecraft Me. For Mr. Joseph Falby, John Bubb, and my guest here in the studio, Chris Fisher, my name is Chase Nunes. Until we all talk again, we are all silent. And since John is not here, hey, Joe, say goodnight, Gracie.
Goodnight, Gracie.